I'll give you one clue, Sherry said with a knowing smile. It's a place where no one's religious, but everyone is super religious. This paradox captures our modern condition perfectly. While traditional religious participation declines, our religious impulses haven't disappeared, they've simply migrated. We may skip Sunday services, but we've never been more pious, with the marketplace in replacement religion booming. Our anxiety levels prove it. We're seldom not in church. Religion isn't just about robes and rituals. It's about what we lean on to tell us we're okay, what justifies our existence. It's what we rely on for enoughness. Listen carefully, and you'll hear that word everywhere. People scrambling to be successful enough, happy enough, thin enough, wealthy enough, influential enough, good enough. Yet no matter how close we get or how much we achieve, we never quite arrive. The threshold doesn't exist for fallible humans. Still, we chase the mirage, often harming ourselves and others in the process. Why? Because an obsession with righteousness is the normal human condition. The longing for righteousness lives in our DNA, driving our self-justification, the energy we expend to feel worthy. This religious impulse hasn't disappeared. It's simply found new altars at which to worship. Picture Cruella de Vil, wild-eyed at the steering wheel, representing our daily struggle to excel in career, maintain social life, stay healthy, and remain sane. When asked how we're doing, we reflexively answer, busy. We complain about packed schedules while secretly preferring them because busyness has become our measure of worth. To be busy is to be valuable and justified. It signals importance and therefore enoughness. This pathological busyness extends everywhere. Even rural North Dakotans report their only leisure comes during medical appointments. The leisure class no longer exists. Frantic activity now serves as our barometer of personal value. Research links constant busyness to chronic stress, heart disease, high blood pressure, and shorter lifespans. Yet busyness remains attractive because it creates a sense of advancement while distracting us from unpleasant realities like doubt and mortality. We wear exhaustion as a badge of honor, with crazy busy becoming today's definitive humble brag. While Jane Austen's characters gloried in idleness, today's status symbol is an overflowing calendar. Keeping up with the Joneses now means trying to outschedule them. Have you noticed how wedding ceremonies increasingly elevate Cupid over God? Romance has become fertile ground for seculosity, where we look to romantic love to tell us we're enough, manage our guilt, and provide transcendence. From middle school onward, we blur the line between who we are and who likes us, turning interactions into performances, creating a paradox where our self-consciousness repels the very validation we seek. Self-justification poisons relationships. When Zal moved his pregnant wife into a noisy apartment, his need to appear as a responsible provider led him to blame her for being ungrateful rather than admit his mistake. This scorekeeping creates competition instead of teamwork. The soulmate myth, believing one perfect person is destined to complete us, has become deeply ingrained. We elevate potential partners into demigods who might redeem us from our inadequacies. Hollywood transforms dating into epic quests for destiny. We now ask one person to give us what once an entire village used to provide, essentially wanting to marry a savior. Real love begins when these illusions deflate. As one writer discovered, our real relationship began with disappointments. Love is something we fail into rather than decide on or earn. Remember when parent was just a noun? Since becoming a verb in the early 1980s, parenting has spawned an industry feeding on anxiety through books, conferences, therapies, and college prep courses, amplifying concerns rather than easing them. The "My child is an honor student" bumper sticker perfectly illustrates this mentality, seemingly expressing pride while actually signaling parental virtue. I am enough because my child goes to this college. This breeds helicopter parenting and its evolution, bulldozer parenting, where parents remove all obstacles from their children's paths. Both helicopter and tiger parenting embrace performancism, achievement as the measure of worth. These approaches are future-obsessed and joyless, leaving no room for natural development. Parents often overinvest in children's activities to compensate for their own disappointments, wanting children to succeed where they failed. Emily Rapp, whose son Ronan was born with terminal Tay-Sachs disease, offers a profound alternative. With no developmental milestones to anticipate, she abandoned the future and focused on making Ronan's brief life comfortable and dignified. This terrible freedom to love children as they are rather than who they might become reveals what unconditional love truly looks like, a non-contingent, compassionate alliance that values being over doing. When Edgar Degas saw his friend's first telephone in 1890s Paris, he noted how his friend had willingly subordinated himself, ready to be summoned at the clang of the bell. This dynamic has intensified with smartphones, which offer constant validation through notifications. The word optimize has spread beyond technology, as we now view humans as machines to be upgraded through life hacks, reflecting techno-solutionism, the belief that every problem has a technological solution. Our data obsession has become overwhelming, with 1 in 8 churchgoers wearing fitness trackers during communion. The issue isn't data itself, but how measurement creates benchmarks for determining our enoughness, sometimes leading to extremes, like the executive who attached his Fitbit to an electric saw to log steps. Staying on top of things has become another form of righteousness. The constant information flood creates an endless game of catch-up, with ICMI representing our fear of missing out. Our connectivity creates expectations of perpetual availability, similar to how labor-saving devices paradoxically increased work standards. Technology secularity thrives on promised affirmation. Online communities reinforce our beliefs while deepening divides, with studies showing anger correlates inversely with accuracy online. Beneath this digital noise lies a fundamental human need to be acknowledged and deemed enough. Our crisis isn't that religion is waning, but that we're more religious than ever about too many things. We build ladders and scoreboards in every area of life, chasing enoughness wherever we turn. Like someone caught in a riptide who must go with the flow rather than fight the current, our attempts to engineer salvation backfire. The only life raft for a world drowning in seculosity is accepting that we're already enough. Snowstorms expose our productivity pieties while offering spiritual gifts. They fall irrespective of our plans, bringing rest and transforming ugliness into beauty. The fourth commandment's call for Sabbath rest may be our most urgent directive, giving us permission to stop and remember we're more than what we produce. Those moments when someone sees our truth yet turns toward us anyway reveal glimpses of grace, the opposite of our endless striving. Perhaps the path forward isn't another self-improvement program, but surrendering to the radical notion that we're already loved beyond measure simply because we exist.